Well, good morning and welcome to WJBM Local Spotlight. And this morning, I am happy to have with me a longtime friend, and we knew each other for years and years and years, and Tom Wuffel, he's a retired chief of police here of Jerseyville, Illinois. Tom, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation. It came as quite a surprise. I've been out of it for a long time, so.
Oh, I know.
Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, we've both been out of it for a long time.
Yes,
Tom.
We have. Well said.
But I think everybody remembers you and knows you. Well, at least anybody that's at least 35 years old.
That's kind of
as the police chief here of Jerseyville. Yeah. You retired, I understand, going on 24 years.
It'll be 24 years in July I've been out, yeah.
Yeah. You're a family man.
I am.
Yes.
I am. That's most important to me, my faith and my family.
Faith and family. And tell us a little bit about your family.
Okay. Mom and Dad were both from Calhoun. Dad was from Meppen, Mom from Brussels. And I met my wife when I was in the service, and greatest blessing God ever gave me, I think. We got married while I was right after Vietnam, and then we moved here when I got out. I went to work for Windy Iron at the Sheriff's Department. We have three kids, Scott, who is deputy chief here now, Lance, who's in Kirkwood, he's an architect, and Regina, who's a CPA, she lives in Shiloh.
I see.
Yeah.
And your lovely wife, Therese.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I remember her well at the school.
Yes.
She worked as a secretary.
Yes.
Lovely person.
Oh, she was great. She was an angel.
Yeah. And she passed away several years ago.
Yeah. It was 11 years in February.
I see. So did you always want to be a police officer?
No. No. When I went into the service, you know, the war was on, and really was kind of drifting. Folks wanted me to go to college, obviously stay safe.
Your folks did.
Yeah. And it would have been a waste of their money and my time. I wasn't ready for college. And so went in the Air Force, thinking I could pick up a trade.
I guess you enlisted.
I did.
Okay. You would have been drafted, but you enlisted?
Right,
okay.
Right.
How old were you?
When I went in, I was 18.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And so they assigned me to a police unit, and I liked it. Then I got transferred to, it's kind of an oxymoron, a combat ground unit, Air Force ground unit, which was for base security in Vietnam.
Where was that at?
Went to training at Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Okay.
Slept in the 101st Airborne Division barracks, and then went to Vietnam as a unit. It was the 823rd Combat Security Police Squadron. It was a part of Operation Safe Side, which is was terminated after we got back because of lack of funding, and then restarted. And I think they were active in, I think, Afghanistan and Iraq. So it's basically Air Force Special Service, Special Forces. So then we got out, and By that time we had Scott, he was born. Then Lance and Regina came along, and we'd moved to Jerseyville as soon as I got out and went to work for
Wendy. Now, why did you move to Jerseyville?
Well, the Air Force at that time would give you an early out if you stayed or if you went into law enforcement. Since I was already in the career field, I thought, you know, take the early out because I'd already gotten orders to go back to Vietnam, and Teresa was pregnant with Scott at the time. And so they didn't require you to go if your wife was pregnant. And so that was the first favor Scott ever did for me. Kept me out of going back.
Not the last favor.
No,
but the first favor.
He did one last night, by the way. Locked myself out of the house.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
So how long were you overseas?
I was there for 6 months, was on a 18-month rotation. We should have gone back every 12 months, and they disbanded it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you ended up in Jerseyville.
Ended up in Jerseyville, worked for Wendy Nairn for about a year and a half, then tested and was hired for the city police department, worked my way up from sergeant, and was appointed chief in 2000.
Who appointed you chief? What mayor was that?
Susnick.
Oh, Susnick?
Yeah,
Joe
yep. Susnick. I said in 2000. I retired in 2000. I was appointed in 1980. Yeah, and then served as chief till 2000, July 2000.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your career as a police chief.
Well, as chief, you know, I had gone to college when I got out of the service, and had a degree. So I was able to apply some things that hadn't been, you know, once you're in a position, you don't get stale, but things progress that maybe you don't pick up on. So we didn't have computers yet, so we were able to get computers and upgrade communication systems and those kinds of things, upgrade vehicles. And training for the officers improved quite a bit. And so we did that, and we had a lot of officers that went through college. As a matter of fact, I think when I retired, there was only one or two guys that didn't have degrees.
Okay.
So the interest in the career field improved, and the service increased and improved because of education and experience that those guys gained. So the department grew a couple of men. I think we were 13 or 14 guys when I retired, 9 when I went into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Between then and now, I know you're still involved, you know, mm-hmm. with what's going on. What was going on then as far as being a police chief, as far as, of course, keeping everything safe,
sure.
keeping everybody safe
sure.
compared to now?
Well, you know, the main focus, your main focus is safety, your men, and primarily citizens. You know, police officers are going to, at times, risk their neck to keep the citizens safe. That's what they do. And back then, those situations arose often. But the crimes back then primarily were property crimes. You know, so we had a lot of bar fights and things back then.
I remember that.
You sure do. I think we got a few phone calls from you. Get over here.
Well, I could just remember, just to go back in time, when I had the hotel restaurant bar and the nightclub there, and the police were so good, you know, because if I had an issue brewing, you know, I would try to take care of it myself mm-hmm. as much as possible.
You did.
And be, you know, it's just about, you know, just talking with people,
sure.
you know, it's not being a tough guy thing. It's just getting them. And I wanted to get them outside. Like
right.
if somebody said, "Hey, I'll kick your butt right here." I go, "Okay, let's go outside."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I would call, or I'd have them call my bartender, say, call the police department, just tell them to make a drive-by. They uh-huh. don't have to get out.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
it's time for a drive-by.
Yeah.
We get outside, all of a sudden, one of the cars just drive by, and they go, okay, I guess this should have gone exactly right. And I go, okay, now get out of here. You've had too much.
Yeah.
So, that was very nice. We were close, just down the street, and kept things under
a lot
control.
Of times, that's a good deterrent. Just being seen.
Yeah.
You know, the officers now have their own vehicles, which they take home. And that is a deterrent just in the neighborhood.
It
you
is.
Know, to see a squad car parked there, the neighbors in that area are, without knowing it, receiving some protection from the city just by the presence of that car. Because somebody coming through the neighborhood looking for a car to break into or a house,
mm-hmm.
they see that thing, and maybe we go somewhere else.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Did you tell your officers how to park and where to park as far as their cars?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Okay.
I mean, on specific occasions, if we were looking for something or doing something,
No,
yes.
I meant at home, when they parked them at home.
No.
You didn't? Okay.
No. I used to run radar. When I was a patrolman, I'd run radar in my driveway because they come blowing through Liberty and Hollow just 40, 50 miles an hour trying to slow people down. So that was parked at the end of my driveway there, but I was in it.
Okay. Yeah, that...
That I can remember. We never told them to park them any specific
way. I just notice sometimes cars are parked in specific ways, and I think it's a good deterrent because I know I slow down. Look and I see a car, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, check my speedometer. I don't want to be speeding for sure.
It's a good deterrent.
Yeah, it is. Makes people think.
It does.
Okay.
It does.
So go on.
Well, now technology has improved so much. I can literally get up and walk out of this room, and without looking for fingerprints, you can tell I've been in this room just from DNA that sheds.
Whoa.
So if there was a terrible crime in here or something, a professional crime scene person can come in and find DNA that we had one DNA case while I was chief. That was right before I retired. So, I mean, that's how new it was. That's 24 years ago, and it's just grown leaps and bounds, plus other technology, surveillance capabilities, and just abilities to identify people that we didn't have back then.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
This is something that's pertinent. This happened right now. I know this is recorded. It's going to be playing later. Mm-hmm. Did you hear what went on in Nashville just lately about the kid getting really intoxicated?
Yes, I saw
and,
that.
Yeah. And now he's missing?
Yes.
He's been missing for several days?
Yes.
Everybody, I think, knows the story. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that story? How come we can't find him? What happened
to that kid? The case itself? Well, I think there – last I just heard this morning that Nashville PD is still going through video from different and see, that's a huge asset to law enforcement that all these stores now have video. Some municipalities have them, like Nashville, I'm sure, on the street. And so they can track movement of vehicles and people. So last I heard, they were still looking at videos. If he's wandered outside the viewing area of those videos, they're going to be in a spot to try and run this guy down unless they can come up with a witness. One of two things happened. I heard he was close to the river, you know, and he could have stumbled into the river, or else somebody may have got him.
Having grown up by the river and having many people meet their demise in the river,
right?
We were always under the understanding that the body usually pops up within 24 hours.
I think it depends on water temperature.
Okay.
And at least my experiences were...
Well, you would know more than me.
Water temperature.
I just remember that.
But this time of year, growing up on the river, you know, you hit the water, first thing you do is gasp. In cold water, you go for air because the water's so cold, it's a natural reflex. Your body, just you're going to suck in air because the water's so cold. If he happened to have fallen in intoxicated, probably would have gone in face first.
Okay.
Gasp in some water.
He got the water into him.
Now, I'm not saying he's in the river, but that was kind of an intimation that they had given.
Yeah. But do you think he's in the river now?
I don't know that.
Yeah. I mean, just that he hasn't turned up yet.
Well, growing up on the river, you've heard of bodies being snagged on tree limbs, rocks, things. Mm-hmm. I remember a tragic situation where a gentleman got washed off a bridge. He was in his truck, got washed off a bridge here in the county. And as far as I know, that body was never found. So you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know. They don't always come up.
Do you think they will get to the bottom of it at this
point?
I
think something will happen. You know, I did see one video clip, and he looked like he was pretty intoxicated.
Yeah.
And you know, somebody with bad intention pulls up next to an intoxicated guy and say, "Bud, you want to ride?" Yeah, hops in the car.
No telling.
Yeah, then there's no telling where he might be.
What's the big lesson besides being intoxicated? But the big lesson is you got to take care of you can't let somebody like it go by themselves.
Yeah, if somebody's, and I'm sure there were times when you had people walk in your door that had enough.
Right. And I'd say, you got to take this guy home.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You got to look out for your partner, your buddy.
Yeah. Well, So now and then, probably, you probably didn't have the drugs that we have today.
We did. We had, matter of fact, I think I made the first cocaine arrest that I can think of. We made a buy from a guy using an informant. And then probably within 6 months, we made a traffic stop, and they had cocaine, and they were out of Alton. And so that was the first time we had seen that. We had had pills and LSD and things like that, which had been around in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as far as other hard street drugs, that was, I think, the first two arrests.
So it wasn't cocaine. Near the issue today.
No. No, and towards the end of my career, we started getting methamphetamine. Matter of fact, there were a couple of guys who were making it here in the county.
Right, and that used to be common.
Yeah.
I mean, as far
and
as—
it's made a big— as I understand it, we've gone through the period with heroin where we lost a lot of people, not only in the country. Here in the county, several people died from heroin overdoses. And now I'm told that that's kind of calmed down a little bit more, and they've gone back to meth because it's safer. Now, whether that's the case or not, I don't know. But anything coming in from outside the counties probably got fentanyl in it.
Yes.
And that'll kill you in a heartbeat.
I know. That's scary.
Terrible stuff.
Well, now that you're retired, and you don't have to worry about all that kind of stuff, so what have you been up to?
Well, I love the city of Jerseyville. I've tried since I retired to stay involved in volunteering for the city government. Andy Macias and I were charged with starting a board. It was going to be the Housing Appeals Board, and for people who rent and have a problem and couldn't get a landlord to do something. But that the city government decided they changed their mind. They didn't want to do that.
Okay.
So then I went on the Zoning and Planning Board, was on that for a little while. And then I went to, they asked me to be on the TIF Board, so that's where I am now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so I've been volunteering since I retired there.
And I'm sure you keep busy with the kids?
Yes.
Grandkids?
Every chance I get. Had little Brooks in the driveway last night when Nick came to unlock my house for me because I didn't have my keys here in the house. So I crawled in the pickup truck and was playing with Brooks. He's the middle. Nick's the middle son, my second great-grandson.
Anything about Grafton? What's going on? Any connections with
you
and Grafton?
I
heard something about
you
and Grafton.
You asked me about things that I've done, and I've been blessed to be able to be a part of things. But I think so far, civilly, other than church, the most important thing I've been, I was asked to be on the board of directors for the National Memorial of Military Ascent.
Oh, yes.
The
That's
monument.
Exciting.
Yes, it's very exciting. It's been up and running, and we're in the fundraising phase now. In June, we're going to have a casting call for gentlemen who are going to be in ranger-type shape.
Okay.
To pose for the actual statues. There are going to be 12 statues in the monument itself, the memorial. And the second Ranger Battalion out of St. Louis has all the World War II equipment and uniforms, and they're going to come over. And the foundry that we're using, Carolina Foundry, will come up with 3D printer scanners, and they're going to scan these men in different positions. And then the castings of the bronze statues will be made off of those.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And it'll be life-size.
It's life-size.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Wow. That's
fantastic. Uniforms and everything will be authentic.
Well, we're going to wrap this interview up.
Okay.
And it has been fun. Enjoyed it
has
immensely.
Been.
Any points that you want to make? Anything you want to say?
You know, I do. I noticed when I came here that the community supported law enforcement a lot.
Back in the day.
And when Herman was here, Herman Blocker, who was chief before me, he enjoyed that. I certainly enjoyed a lot of community support for the department. But when we had an officer shot here several years ago, and the community rallied around him and the department in a way that I was just so impressed.
Yes.
You know, you know the community, you know the people, but then they take another step and you go, my God, look at these people. And they lined the streets when this kid came back to town from the hospital.
I know.
It was amazing. Yeah, it went right by you.
Yeah.
It was great to see.
Yes.
It makes you proud to be here.
I know. Yeah. You know, and in these interviews that I've been doing over the last several months, the thing that keeps coming up is this community.
Yeah.
And when I talk about the community, I'm including the Tri-County, mm-hmm. Calhoun, Greene, and Jersey. Yeah. The people. The people are something else.
They are.
They're great. They're just amazing. They're yeah.
The other thing I want to point is that crime now is filtering in from the city. The two counties to the south of us, their state's attorney started a task force called Cross River Crime. These people are coming out of St. Louis and doing crimes all around the metropolitan area on the Illinois side. The so-called Safety Act has added to that problem because they know they're going to come over here. If they get caught, they're going to get a ticket. They're going to go back with a notice to appear with no bond.
Right.
So be aware of what you see. If you see something, call the police. That's yep. what they're there for, and they'll appreciate anything you see in your neighborhood that shouldn't be there.
Yes. And you can call the Crime Stoppers.
Absolutely, Crime Stoppers.
Yes, the old Crime Stoppers.
That's right.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So we'll see you.
Okay. God bless.
Bye.